This is an ohs.com.au production.
Welcome to episode 47 of the Australian Health and Safety Business Podcast. I'm Brendan Tarazzi, the host of the show, and this morning I'm joined with Jason Jennings from CSI in Canberra. Good morning.
Morning, Brendan. How are you going, mate?
Great, great. Now, you've really taken a bit of an innovation and a lead on silica awareness and getting a nationally recognised course approved.
Yes. It's been quite a journey, but it's been done.
So can you tell us why? What were the reasons for that?
Okay, so look, I've been the CEO of CSI here in Canberra for over 15 years. And when I first started in the training industry back in 2004, we were actually training around the dangers of silica-containing products and obviously silicosis. Now, I think over time, what seemed to me had happened is the asbestos issue became more and more of an issue. And I think just by virtue of that and different initiatives around Australia, in particular around asbestos awareness training and so on, it maybe didn't sort of get the attention it maybe needed from industry. So in 2017, through our industry consultation as an RTO, we got feedback that, you know, silica is going to be the next asbestos potentially. There's a need to educate workers. We work very closely with the CFMU branch here in the ACT, and there was some feedback we got from them around the dangers, both you know, on a national level, and we're seeing things overseas as well in the US and so on. So we put together our first non-accredited awareness course that was a two-hour course, and we do a lot of work for the local TAFE, the Canberra Institute of Technology, and we rolled that course out to the apprentices in their first, second and third year of construction trades to get their feedback and also start piloting it in the industry. So that's the start there.
Wow. So can you, for people that don't know about silica, can you give us sort of some practical examples of where workers may be exposed to silica?
So look, obviously in the media at the moment, you're seeing around manufactured stone benchtops and the dangers around that. Look, from our perspective and when we put the course together, it's not just contained to that particular product. So you've got concrete, it's sand, you've got tiles, it's a raft of different products that contain silica at different concentrations. So, if you go on any building site or any construction site, I suppose around Australia, you would find silica-containing products being cut and used on a daily basis.
So, I mean, I'm thinking of some examples near my kids' school where I recently saw, you know, road crews cutting up the roads, no PPE, dust flying everywhere. Is that an example of where, you know, they could be potentially exposed to silica?
Yeah, well, I think that it wouldn't be unfair to say that we've got an issue how we deal with a product on a day-to-day basis in the workplace on building sites. But as you were just indicated then it flows into the wider community. How we're doing demolition, for instance, concrete cutting, civil works and so on. So, yeah, it's probably a fair assumption to make that it's not just combined to workers.
So it's no mean feat to be able to get an accredited course up and running with ASQA. Can you walk us through, like, the process of doing that? How long does it take? What are the hurdles?
Yeah, no, fair enough. So, as I said before, we sort of started putting the course together in 2017 and then I'd had a bit of an exposure before around getting courses accredited with ASQA, so I had a bit of an idea of what we were up for. So what we wanted to do first was do some industry research around what was in play before we went down putting the initial concept ASQA. So we did a bit of a research around Australia around what was available at that particular time. So we're talking early 2018. There was a number of probably ad hoc non-accredited courses that were available at that stage, but there was nothing that seemed to be on the agenda on a national level for a national unit of competence or anyone else seeming to be doing an accredited course. So around that time, we pushed forward and engaged with our local training advisory body, industry training advisory, the Construction Industry Training Council here in Canberra, it had been on, they had seen the need for this over a period of time through their the work they do for the Training Fund Authority here in Canberra. It had been in the training plan for a year or so. So we brought together we worked with the union, we worked with some of the employers, and we worked with the training advisory body to put the initial concept to ASQA for that sort of like a pre-approval that you go through with ASQA. That came back and said, well, yeah, they see a need for it, and they were happy for us to push forward. So then we put the actual initial application together that we lodged with ASQA. This was now around mid-2019 by the time we'd worked through all the different things. We're allocated then a case manager from ASQA that knew a fair bit about the topic around silica and silicosis and so on, so which was good. And we went through the process and we worked it out. And I think usually these, from what I understand, it could take anywhere between 6 and 12 months to get an accredited course. This managed to get through in about three to four months. So,
oh, that's amazing.
So I think the need for industry was obviously evident with the work we'd done in the initial application or in the media around that time. We're highlighting the issue around it, and as we've seen it. So it was near the end of November 2019, they officially accredited it.
So I guess that's the first step, having the actual national unit of competency. Yeah. How do you then get, you know, what are the next steps now to try and get industry to take it up? Because, I mean, there's a view that a lot of people in the industry are a bit lazy and they'll only do it if they're told they have to. I know Canberra has, you know, you guys have been amazing in leading, like, say, with the asbestos awareness first territory to mandate that. How do you get this thing started so industry actually stop and take notice and start doing the training required?
Yeah, look, I think industry understand that it's an issue, and I think they're probably looking for a way of being able to manage it. And I don't think that it would be unfair to say that training is the only thing that should be done. I think it plays a part in a systematic way of approaching it. Generally, the employers that we do with our client base, that they were sort of waiting to get an accredited course. They want to be able to make sure that there's a train and assessment component, which comes with an accredited course, and making sure workers are walking away with the knowledge that they need to be able to implement it in the workplace. In this particular course, through the negotiations with ASQA, they wanted us to train and assess against developing two safe work method statements, which, you know, is probably something that industry needs as well. So, look, generally, the feedback we're getting, unfortunately for us, we get it accredited in late 2019. We get into the start of 2020 to think we're going to roll this out. COVID hits. And there was a bit of a hiatus for probably 12 months. Look, generally, on face value, I think industry, obviously through our what we've seen in the training plan here in the ACT, want something. We went out, we developed and we delivered it.
Yeah. So the companies that are taking it up now, actually, they've identified it as a risk in the workplace, and they're looking to mitigate their risks by educating their staff and just sort of really underlining what the potential risks are anyway.
Yeah, look, around mitigation, I think that's, you know, maybe only part of it. I think it's more around, you know, employers wanted to meeting their obligations as a PCBU, and then being able to look at this, how do we train and instruct our workers? I think that industry want to take it to a next level as well. You know, I think that look, we've got high-risk license, we have accredited training. You know, we've got accredited training for trades and cert threes and carpentry and so on. And that's where I think, you know, back in the day when the asbestos awareness course was nationally accredited and became mandated in the territory, that they wanted to see a train and assess outcome to ensure that workers got what they needed. So, that's sort of where I'm sort of seeing industry sort of heading.
Yeah, because, I mean, it is a long-term process, isn't it? Like, you really want to get those apprentices right at the start of their career to know all about the dangers. So,
I think it's like anything, Brendan. You know, in the time I've worked in industry around, you know, we do impairment awareness training, which we did that accreditation for that course at the same time I was doing the silica accreditation.
Oh, okay.
So I had two running alongside of each other, which in hindsight I might do that again. But anyway,
you're a brave man.
Yeah, pretty heavy. you know, I mean, it was a pretty heavy 12 months. But I think when there's a need and we need to bring it to the industry and we need to have quality training outcomes, the benefit we have when we do an accredited course is that you develop the training resources and have that available for RTOs to deliver this particular course, whether it's our impairment course or the silica course. We were never going to be the only RTO that delivered this course. It was something that we saw that we could bring to industry, both the construction industry and the vet sector, to say, well, here's a model course that we believe will give industry what they need. And there's certain things that we write into the application to deliver that we want the trainers to hold higher qualifications than just the unit. We want them to have a Cert 4 in work health and safety.
Yeah.
Along with, you know, a commitment from the RTO that we are going to do a 12-month audit as the course owner on the top of what our school will do over the, you know, through our 5-year, 7-year monitoring audits to ensure that the quality training outcomes are there. Yeah.
Well, it makes a lot of sense having, I guess, you know, when you have an accredited course to have the prescribed course materials, and that way you can be, and you know, you've got other hurdles about, you know, the types of trainers that can deliver. It makes sense that you get a consistent minimum benchmark that you can deliver this course in. Yep. So what about, tell us about the impairment one. I didn't know about that. So that's another accredited course that you've got over the...
Yeah, it's another accredited course, yeah. So that one was a bit longer in the process. It started when I first started in 2004. We were delivering a drug and alcohol program, and it was a drug and alcohol awareness course that evolved over time into a workplace impairment course for dealing with mental health, drugs, alcohol, you know, fatigue, so on and so forth. So we again ran the same process, ran that out for a long period of time as a non-accredited course. And then we saw that, there, again, after we did the research, that there was nothing in that area around that's accredited. So we went through the same process simultaneously. So that's good as well.
And do you think, I mean, mental, you know, mental illness or, you know, that seems to be in the media a hell of a lot at the moment, particularly with what, you know, a lot of people have been through in 2020 and into 2021. Do you think due to that there's a bit more of a need for that at the moment? Like,
oh, look, I think that if you look at the statistics around suicide, you know, I think the construction industry is now double the national average in construction.
Wow, okay.
And, you know, you've got different programs. We work closely here with an organisation called Construction Charitable Works that provides case management services for drugs and alcohol and, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder and a raft of things. So we're of a believer when we go and deliver training, and we're seeing this for the silica course as well, when you come with a problem, you've got to be able to come with a solution. Now, the impairment course is all around work health and safety. It's not, we're not coming in with an ideological issue around drugs and alcohol, for instance. So we're talking on a work health and safety issue around when you come to work, you've got to be able to, you shouldn't be impaired, that then has a flow-on effect. So we're talking about the work health and safety issue, but then obviously when we're having these conversations, it's people in the room do sometimes need support. So we also then have the welfare support services running alongside of when we're delivering the training. So it's a holistic package.
Why do you think the construction industry has those, you know, double the normal levels? Is it the stress of the job, or like what are the drivers that make that industry susceptible to having those impairment issues?
Yeah, I think a number of things. You know, I think it's there's long hours that workers do, and you know, there's times when you're away from your family for periods of time, whether it's due to the long hours, and that has a potential knock-on effect. So I'm only giving you an anecdotal.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I think that from what I've seen over the time, I actually worked in that welfare support arm as a welfare officer for a period of time while I was involved with the training arm. And it's a lot around, you know, being away from your family for long periods of time. I think then the stresses of industry where you gear yourself up financially depending on what hours you're working.
Yep.
And as we know, there's highs and lows in construction and sometimes there's no work, and we saw that last year potentially in some areas with the COVID pandemic. So then you've geared yourself up financially potentially, and then how do you unpack that if you're not bringing income in? So I think there's numerous reasons.
Yep.
And I think that we talk around the workplace mental health component of that. But then drugs and alcohol is a wider issue for the general population and community. But then we've also got fatigue. You know, I mean, like there's the longer hours, the potential of workplace fatalities and injuries due to fatigue. So it's a holistic approach to how we try and manage that. But even with the silica course, when we're in there educating workers around the dangers of silica, we're providing our welfare support there as well.
Yeah.
Because some workers just didn't understand the magnitude of what potentially might be in front of them. And then they need to get support services while, you know, on the day or soon after they've done the training. So, yeah.
No, that's amazing. I mean, it sounds like, you know, the stuff you're delivering is making a real difference out there in workplaces and, as you say, giving solutions to workers, not just sort of talking at them at the dangers.
Look, we've got a true commitment to be wanting to deliver quality training.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's sort of where when we did the silica course in particular, we wrote in there that we wanted to continually improve and evaluate this course every 12 months.
Yeah.
Okay. So within the first 12 months, we went back to ASCA with some amendments we wanted to donate to the unit in around delivery because we didn't obviously know there was a pandemic when we first went through it.
Yeah.
We're in the second year now of doing the continuous improvement, and we've engaged with the Australian Institute of Occupational Hygienists that have just done a full review on the course content and provided some feedback to us that we're going to take on board and more around wording and potential the training resources. So once we complete that, which will be in the next month or two, we'll then be able to utilise their logo and they're endorsing the course content. And from our perspective, I think that's a bit of a no-brainer. You know what I mean? Look, it's about us continually improving the training resources. The idea of having the annual audits with the RTOs is about getting feedback from the trainers in different states about how it's landing on the ground in the different states to then funnel all that information back and make adjustments that potentially better the course and continually improve it.
So do you think that it's a matter of time now before regulators jump on board in supporting this initiative?
Well, look, I think, you know, I've seen in, it was in the Canberra Times a number of weeks back now that there is an appetite, I believe, from the ACT government to mandate, you know, an accredited silica awareness course alongside of what they've done around asbestos.
Yep.
So, you know, that'll all unfold, I suppose, over the next period of time and how that rolls out. But I think, you know, that, as you pointed out there before, it's like everything. If you've got to do something to be able to work in industry and you've got to have, you know, whether it be a white card or an asbestos card in the ACT or if it's silica, it's silica. And I think that that'd be obviously a good thing to get people involved and then we get the message out there, we educate the workforce. And like I said earlier on, it then brings together a holistic approach of how we're going to manage silica in the workplace.
Yeah, because it's interesting, like with asbestos awareness, still the ACT is the only sort of innovator. The other states just seem to be so slow to, like they all want to do it, but I don't know if it's politics or priorities or...
I don't know. it's an interesting concept. Look, it's refreshing that the ACT and in particular the territory is, we like to be at the forefront of these issues. And I think with being able to run it out, you would assume that it'd just be something that you'd look at and go, okay, why don't we do this here? But, you know, obviously different states are looking after what they need to do.
Yep. Okay, well, thanks so much, Jason, for coming on the show today and telling us about your courses. If people want to reach out to you and find out a little bit more about getting the training delivered, what's your website?
Yes, so it's... CSI, probably better if you're in the office, maybe.
Yeah, okay.
02-6230-1320, and you just leave a message. I'm doing a lot of the talking with the other RTOs to bring them on. You know, we've got five RTOs on now. We're negotiating with another three.
Yep.
The next round of the continuous improvement for us is to engage with a university.
Yep.
To do a business case, evidence-based review on survey on the course. So they're in the office. I'm more than happy to, I don't mind you answer, I'm more than happy to talk to anyone about what we intend on doing and helping them getting it on scope so they can deliver it.
And so though, just to give people a flavour as well, the course runs for 4 hours, is that?
Yeah, 4 hours face-to-face.
Yep.
with a, and that includes the assessment component at the end.
Yep. And the impairment course, how long does that?
Yeah, same.
Same.
Yeah, yep. So it's 4 hours. Yeah, face to face with the assessment component at the end of it.
Yep.
And we're rolling them both out simultaneously. So now that we've got them accredited, so
brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, never a dull moment.
Congratulations, mate. That sounds like fantastic work that you guys are doing.
No worries at all. Thanks for your time, Brendan. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to an ohs.com.au production.
I hope you've been enjoying listening to the podcast. If you are, it would be great if you could help us out by leaving us a review and sharing this with friends and colleagues.